Welcome all, step right up, step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 154, ranking the games of June 2020. Howdy everybody, Portal Gaming Podcast is a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal. For more information, you can log in on to www.theportalct.com. You can check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. That's where you'll find me, your host for this episode, The Brant. Episode 154. Portal Game Podcast is also a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Hello, everybody. It is great to be with you, to be talking to you about board games, one of my favorite things to do. We're going to rank the games I played in June 2020. There were 31 games, but I'm going to rank 30 of them because one of them is out, which is Marvel Champions, and I was number one the last 2 months, so I'm not going to talk about that. Not too much there. Although the one joyous thing was that Larry and I managed to knock out Rhino Heroic 3, and that was fun to do. But moving on from there. Hello, everybody. It has been hot and especially humid in Connecticut. You'll probably hear my AC running in the background because it is sticky, and I don't like that. So maybe a little extra noise. And we're on the precipice of Tropical Storm Fay, which is coming at us today. Doesn't look like it's going to be too bad in terms of all that. So not too much. It's heading a little bit east, but yeah, there you go. So that's kind of what's happening around here. I hope you're doing well. I hope your summer's going well. I can't believe that we're like into mid-July, which means we're halfway through the summer here. And anticipating what the fall is going to be like in America in 2020 after a crazy spring and now just kind of a weird summer with no traveling, no conventions, no vacations. You know, what's the fall going to look like with this whole corona and everything that's happening, who knows? So that'll kind of be interesting, even on the storefront, what we're going to be doing. No, currently we're not open for playing. We're open for purchasing. Yeah, we'll see where all that goes and what makes the most sense. Connecticut is doing very, very, very well right now. We are like a green state in terms of green, yellow, red, because we've taken a lot of precautions. But who knows? That's basically that here. So we're going to jump into the games and go through them. Like I said, I got 30 games. I'm going to rank them. This never works so well. I try to rank based on, sorry, it's always fun to talk about. It's just, it's kind of up in the air as to what's where. But I'm kind of talking about these in terms of just games played, like that specific gameplay of this month or series of games that I got to play this month. It's a pretty good list. There's mostly games on here that I would be willing to replay. There's a few that, I could take them or leave them. And I'll kind of start with those and work my way up to the number one, which you could probably predict, but maybe when I get to it, you'll be like, oh, of course. But it's not Marvel Champions. All right, here we go. So starting off with number 30, this is Archipelago. So this is a game from a while ago, and I got a chance to play it again this month. And just don't want to play it anymore. The game itself is okay. There's a weird exploration mechanism. I don't even know where you are. I apologize. You're somewhere in the New World, and you're colonizing. And, you know, I don't necessarily mind games with that theme. I think it's starting to get a little more stressful for me, a little more pushback. But this one, it would just, there were just elements where it's like there are locals who are available for work, but you know, the more there are, the more unrest they get, and they try to have a revolution. And anyway, there was that piece that just was kind of uncomfortable, but overall, you know, wasn't horrible. But I would struggle to teach this game to other people, not knowing if that was something they wanted to play or not. It's kind of an interesting theme that's been around forever and now is just popping up more and more. But there were other elements of the game that just weren't as interesting. I originally liked that. It's kind of, I think of it as the Twa mechanism. Everybody gets a secret goal, but everybody's going to score based on first, second, or third. So, and then there's one face up. Basically, you're going to try to score your own goal and then compete for the one that's in the center and hope you come in second on the others, because those are most of your points. The exploration is weird because it's like you get to either do the top tile or you get to look at the bottom of it and hope you can do it, or do the next tile's top or bottom. And I had some times where I just couldn't explore and it's like lose a turn. Just wasn't fun. Some other pieces. So it's a game I had played several times, and I think I'm just done with that game. It shows its age. I want some more interesting things. Just not a game I'm going back to, so we'll move on. Number 29 is Fireball Island. This is actually a pretty fun game. It's just something I really want to play with kids or family. I want it to be really light. I want it to be raucous. I could see a summer cabin with family, you know, playing on a rainy day or kind of playing towards the evening and just a lot of hooting and hollering. It's definitely a well-made game, but, you know, it's just very light. It's not trying to be strategic by any means. It's just what happens. But it definitely brings that joy factor with all those. So, again, I would play it under that circumstance, but it's not something I'm looking to play regularly in terms of that. So Fireball Island, Restoration Games. As much as I know publishers, I will tell you, I can't remember for Archipelago who the publisher is. Next up, 28, I played Munchkin Dungeon. I only got to play once, so I never did a review of it, but this is the new game from Simon. And it definitely changes up the Munchkin formula. You're kind of delving down into the dungeon physically on a board, and you have your character, and you're going to roll dice and trigger different abilities in order to try to defeat monsters. It's still kind of got that wandering monster element. The minis are really cool. Like, they're definitely brought the John Kovalik art to life, so that was really neat. So again, this is something that I would play again, but somebody would have to kind of be like, ooh, I really want to play that game again, and then I would kind of go after that. It's better than Munchkin to me. It doesn't quite have the same humor factor. Maybe that humor's starting to get a little bit lost because of playing so much Munchkin when I was younger. So again, it was a fun game. It was a romp. It was a dice roller. It had a lot of take that. It has a fun mechanism, which actually is kind of in part to the old Lord of the Rings Decipher game, where I choose to move and then I add like tokens to the pool, danger tokens, and then people can go around and spend them, which was neat because it's encouraging you, because if you don't spend them, then they'll be there for your turn and other people can spend them. So it's encouraging you to play your cards. So I like that element and some other things, which were neat. So yeah, that was that. The next up here, number 27, is Super Ultra Deluxe 2D Arcade Mega Fighter. I don't know if I got all those words in the right order. Again, I don't know the publisher. It's a neat little two-player game. It's got the old, like, 8-bit art, and you pick three fighters, and you're kind of doing the Street Fighter thing. And it's a fun mechanism. Like, you draw cards from the center, and they have buttons. So they have, like, red buttons, blue buttons, and yellow buttons, like you're in the arcade. And you have to, like, play pairs or combos of them. And it's got a neat mechanism where it's like, maybe I have to hit red and then blue, so I play those cards. And then the next move I want to do needs blue and then yellow. Well, since blue was my last card, I can just play a yellow to combo off of that. So it definitely knew how to play that, like, fighting combo thing well, and you're kind of scoring points, and you can switch your people out, and they have abilities, and you're just going until you punch everybody out. So it was a neat two-player game. Again, something I would play again, but not itching to get after. Number 26 is Ni No Kuni 2. So this is a really, really light, cooperative, almost family-style game. I guess there's like a video game. I know I've seen it on Switch. And I'm not sure where else this goes to, kind of an anime style. But what you're basically doing here is you can assign yourself and, oh boy, you have these little figures, or these little tokens that are really cute. And you're trying to, like, stop the danger in the land. So there's, like, a boss that you're trying to reach a threshold. You want to be over that threshold number. So you go to these different locations, and then you pick, like, a type you're going to fight through magic or through physical combat or whatever is persuasion. And you roll a certain number of dice, and you're trying to reach a number. So it might be, okay, you're going to get three dice, and you need to roll an 18. Well, that's going to be really hard. So you're going to add one of your little characters. That's going to give you four dice. And maybe you find a way to add another die. Now you're rolling five dice for an 18. And you got reroll tokens and all sorts of other things. But that's basically it. If you defeat it, you're going to collect a bunch of resources and maybe get an ability or something. You're also going to remove that threat. So if it was like a four threat, you're going to remove it, which is going to lower that threshold you need for endgame to win. And when you collect those tokens, then as a group, you stick them all in the center of the board, and you discard them to build buildings. So you're building up your city to gain either, you know, value towards that endgame threshold or other abilities or dice that everybody can use. And that's kind of what you're doing. really light, really simple. It was fun. It took us like 40 minutes. We crushed it. We needed like 18 or something, 22, and we had like 44. So it was very simple, but it was something fun to play with kids. I would think it would be a fun family game. And if you were into that theme, if you'd played that game, I think it would be neat. So it was definitely a neatly made game. It kept everything really simple, which was nice, but kind of similar to the other ones. You know, I play it again, but not begging. Number 25 is, it's still a good game, but I would say it's probably one of the most disappointing games I played, which is Godspeed. This is from Pandasaurus. And again, I only played once, so I didn't do a review, but it just didn't have, like, layers that I was looking for, and different directions you could go. So what's happening in Godspeed? The whole idea is that the moon landing was a sham, and it was to cover up the finding of this other secret planet, and now we're all there as global superpowers trying to get to this planet and kind of exploit it for resources. Essentially, you've got these four different colored tracks. They don't really differentiate themselves from each other, and then you're going through a series of worker placement and bidding. So there's kind of a first card that's flipped over, and you can choose to commit your token, your worker there, which you'll lose them, but you don't get a negative effect. If everybody commits, you all get a positive effect. Then you're going to do like a bidding where you can bid those workers to draft cards that have various abilities. And then your worker placement, you're going to end up only getting two worker placements. So if you bid a whole bunch and only have one left, you only get one worker placement. If you didn't bid a lot and you had three left, you just have choices. But you're only going to get two, which was a nice element. And basically, you're trying to get these cards and turn in resources to build them. You're trying to build things on the planet and build up resources. And that was neat. And as you do that, you move up on these various tracks and collect other resources. Why are you trying to be up on the tracks? Well, at the end of the game, whoever's highest on each track gets 8 points, second gets 4, third place gets 2, and they also give you resources as you move up and whatnot. You can also build a relic, and as you go into the last series of rounds, the game is 10 rounds, so kind of the third phase, which is 7 through 10 round, you get like a really powerful special ability if you build the relic. So that was neat. That was a fun element. You get to kind of draft those. And I liked that part a lot because that kind of gave you some variety. I guess where I had some issue was like these tracks that you move up, and they're different colored, but they're all the same. I would have loved to have one track be like the you get a lot of resources and or you can spend them, and another track be like you can get a lot of cards. This one could be like you might have an opportunity to get an extra worker placement on a turn, or you don't have to use that bid. So some of the cards did that, and there was some variety to that, but just not in the level that I was really hoping. Like, ooh, next time I'm going to try this. That wasn't really coming out in the game. And so that, I think that's where I was a little disappointed. I would totally like to play it again before I even give it a review, because who knows, maybe that was just that play and that's how things worked out. But I was really, really looking forward to it, and it wasn't quite what I was hoping for. Number 24 is Baron Park. I like the game a lot. It's just very basic. This particular play was with a kid, so we were just keeping everything really simple on that front. And so we didn't use all the elements of the game. It's still a game I like, but tile laying isn't really one of my favorites. But that's that. So that kind of is like my games that I was like, eh. Like these are, I would play them again, and I could see some benefit. I don't think I want to play Archipelago again at all. And these have reasons that I would play them, but none of them like really got me excited. Like, ooh. But now we move to these last set of games, these last 20-something games. And these are like, hey, these were fun games to great games. All right, so here we go. We have Monster Lands. So this is a game that was like a Kickstarter a year ago, and I got a copy of this, and I've only played solo. It reminds me a lot of Champions of Midgard, which I love. Now, it's got a lot of dice rolling and then mitigation of dice rolling, so I start to think of, like I said, Champions of Midgard, which doesn't have as much mitigation as, okay, you can roll again, you can roll again, you can roll again, which this doesn't have so much of that. I would think mitigation to me would be like one deck dungeon is just amazing at that. You would just, yeah, manipulate all your dice. Kind of reminds me of that element for that game. And yeah, so I really like that kind of style. And it was pretty interesting. It's kind of here in the good because I really want to play it again, but I need to play with like people, for lack of a better way to say it, and try it. Not that a solo mode isn't, you know, worth reviewing, but I would like to just have more player counts to be able to do that with this game. So it was really fun. You're kind of collecting, it feels like you're collecting like Viking-style characters, and they all give you different dice of colors. You have like what are the yellow dice? They're like for going to the market and like almost like economic dice. And then just attack dice and magic dice. And different, there's like monsters attacking different lands, monster lands. And you can kill the monster, you're kind of working together, or you can like capture the land and claim it for your own once the monster's dead. So it's kind of an interesting mechanism where you're kind of lining up to fight the monster. And if you don't beat it, you will deal whatever damage you dealt to it. And then I need to deal the rest to defeat it. And then the person after me could capture the land. So it's kind of interesting on that front. But you're definitely, it's a competitive game. You're working against each other to try to do that. The other thing the dice roll remind me of is almost like Last Bastion or Ghost Stories, where you're trying to like use the dice to almost mitigate what you need to spend. So you want to kind of have all the resources and then kind of use them to mitigate. So interesting on that front. Yeah, it was a really fun game. It's definitely like a Euro style with those dice rolls. And so it's just a matter of like how random does that feel? How much can you control? Where does all that go? But yeah, that's kind of the idea there. So that is Monsterlands. Next up is Santa Monica, kind of a newer game from AEG. And Santa Monica is just a nice aesthetic. It's just a great game for this summertime. You're walking up and down the beaches and the boardwalk of Santa Monica in California. Which is kind of fun because I've been there, and the Santa Monica Pier is kind of famous, and the festival around there and all that. And it's just a really simple card drafting game. You're drafting from a center row. There's kind of two rows, and you can draft from the front row, and then the other card slides down. And you're going to get all sorts of different things. You're going to add the card to your tableau, and it's going to give you some way. It'll score points at the end. And then it's going to allow you to kind of like move people around. You've got like VIPs and locals and tourists, and they're all moving around trying to be in certain places. In terms of all that, and eventually you can collect sand dollars, and you could spend the sand dollars to do like a special action. Like this turn, you can draft from the back row, and you can move your people around. That's kind of the idea, is you're trying to draft all these cards to form a tableau that'll score points and move all of your people to places like, okay, the tourists are going to be at the restaurants, and the locals are going to be out playing volleyball on the beach, and the VIP wants to be at the hotspot, you know, whatever it is, the music club, all those kind of things. And there's just lots of little clever mechanisms in there, like there's cards you'll draft that say you can go no further to the left of this card. It's the end of the beach. And there's other cards that are like shark-infested waters, so you don't want to go near that, and whatever else it is, and buildings along the boardwalk. And then there's different, every game has like different scoring criteria, so you're trying to chase after those in order to score. So again, it's just a really light card drafting game, I don't know the name, but the one where you're drafting where you can see everything in the center, not like a Sushi Go. Definitely heavier than Sushi Go, and then a lot of changing victory point conditions. So it's kind of like a Gateway Plus, I guess, like you would teach people drafting and then this style game. But the aesthetic is really honestly my favorite part, just that, like being on the beach and beach chairs and outdoor eating and seafood and, oh my goodness, I'm hungry now. All those kind of things. That's just one of my favorite places to be, living close to the shoreline here in Connecticut and being able to hop, skip, and jump there in, you know, 25, 30 minutes. That's just an awesome place to go. So that's Santa Monica by AEG. That was my 22. Definitely liked it. Like to play it again. Forgotten Waters. I did a review of this. I had a chance to play. And yeah, that was a really neat game. I'm not sure. I'm not quite decided about like what group I would play this with. I used to have kind of like a group that played at my house on Sunday nights, and I would totally do that. Because I just like how you like fill out the Mad Lib style thing, and then you're just kind of using the app to cruise through everything, and it does an app in a great way. It reads all the stories in character voice, which, you know, is something that sometimes I would do or other people would do, but it's just nice that it's all there. It's got that humor, but you're still going for something. There's still mechanisms in there and worker placement and timing. So, yeah, just a really neat game that, again, kind of these ones at the bottom are like, I would love to play these again because I had a lot of fun, but I don't know where they rank. After just a play or two. Next up is Monolith Arena. I did get a couple plays of this in. This is like an old, well, no, I guess like a year old. 2 years old? I'm not sure how old it is. A game from Portal Games. I'm signed up for PortalCon, which is this weekend. So I'm going to check out some new games from them and Ignacy and everybody over there. But Monolith Arena is kind of like a reimplementation, like a fantasy version of Niroshima Hex. They really cleaned a lot of things up, it feels like to me. And it's got this monolith mechanism where you can almost like reserve tiles, so you can have the right tile at the right time. But since both players can, it's like fair. So it removes some of that timing. Yeah, really neat idea. Really fun game, and it plays in like 30 minutes. You're drawing tiles from your stack. You're picking two out of your three tiles to play, and you're placing them on this grid. And then some of the tiles can like start a battle. And all the facing and things deal damage, and the different factions were really interesting. So again, something I did play a couple times, and I'd be interested in playing again. Number 19 is Power Rangers, Heroes of the Grid. I've been trying to play this. I kind of had the funny story that I went to Gen Con last year, and Larry and Brian were in the middle of a game, and somebody who was playing it with them, like demoing, was like, oh, I have to go. You can take my character. And I was the Pink Ranger. And they explained to me how to play the game and everything. Okay, draw your cards. Now you get punched. You discard your card. Oh, and you're out. And I never got a chance to play. And then, you know, people had played once or twice, and they weren't super interested, but I got a chance to play. And, yeah, it was really fun. It's definitely unique. Like, I'm not really into Power Rangers. I could take them or leave them. I kind of know the idea. I think I've said before, but it's like I was a little bit older than Power Rangers were. Like, Pokemon was definitely younger than me. I didn't dabble in Pokemon, and Power Rangers was, like, right there when I was in, like, 6th, 7th grade. It was becoming popular, so it was kind of like, yeah, this is neat. And then I outgrew it shortly after that. So I could take it or leave it, but they definitely did a good job creating like a fighting system that's unique and all these ideas and characters with different powers. In the play that I had, I didn't find my character that interesting. We kind of realized later that I was defensive and how I could have done better with that. But I wasn't privy to that at the time I was playing. So that's kind of where that fell. Number 18 is the new Back to the Future. What is it? Back in Time. So there's two Back to the Futures right now. I haven't gotten a chance to play the DICE one yet, but this is the Funko one, and I really enjoy it. I like the game a lot, but it just doesn't seem to appeal to a lot of people, so I don't know how much I'm going to play it, which is kind of what pushes it down that list. It's like one of those games that I'm going to suggest, but other people are going to be like, I'm good. So again, that like Sunday night crew that I used to have, they would be totally down for this game. But Kathy could take her leave Back to the Future. Zephyr enjoyed watching the movies, but the game isn't of high interest to her. So it's something that if I play it, I would probably be playing solo or, you know, with a group I could find. You know, currently I could not. This would be a great game to play at a con with a bunch of people who are excited and teach them. I'd have a lot of fun because the dice rolling is fun and it's silly and it really has that theme. So I enjoyed it. Back to the Future, Back in Time. 17 is Abandon All Artichokes. This game just keeps getting played every month. It's just a fun game. Cycle through. Emma Larkins did a great job. Game right. Good production. And you're just trying to get rid of all those cards, all those artichokes, or as many as you can, so you draw a hand that has none in it. It's just extremely light deck building. It's like deck building without an economy, which is really an interesting way of doing that. Clever game. Gets played a whole bunch. 16 is I picked up a copy of Rurik, Dawn of Kiev, and I played solo, I played a two-player, and I played a four-player? Yeah. And, yeah, it's a fun game. It's solid. It's like a dudes-on-a-map-style game, but it's got this really, like, extreme bidding worker placement board that gets really hectic. It was a little too hectic with four players, and it's hard to predict everybody and go there, so probably would like it a little bit more with three. But yeah, it's a really interesting game. It's very low scoring. Like, you're scoring 20 points to win the game. So it's very, very, very tight in, like, a Euro way. The combat is just I can, like, bid to gain combat, and then I can eliminate your figures in a space where I am. Like, straight up simple. Really easy. There's not a lot of rolling and other things. I may then lose some of my figures in that fight in terms of that. But, yeah, there's a lot going on, and you can just do, like, collection of resources to score points and whatnot. But it all really comes down to that. It's worker placement, but the workers have numbers on them, and I push your workers down if I'm higher, and I can also bid money to be higher. So it really feels more like an auction. And a pretty intense one at four players. 15 is a game I picked up because of Geek All-Stars. Chris Kirkman loves this game called, like, a one-hour wonder, and it's Pioneers from Queen Games, and this just has really been a hit. I played it several times now, and Zephyr really enjoyed this one, especially. But it was a spiel. It wasn't a nom. It was on the recommended list. And then I'd seen it at conventions, but it was always like full MSRP, and I wasn't sure about the game and how much it was. I think it might have even been like $70. And I kind of managed to pick it up a lot cheaper than that through like internet sales. And so I grabbed a copy of it, and we've gotten to play it. It's really neat. You're like going out west and building as you head out west in America, and you're just stopping at these octagon tiles, and you have to pick them up, and you drop somebody off from your caravan. You're trying to empty your wagons. When you empty your wagons, you score points with all the different people. And then the people you drop off, the tiles you collect, kind of go together, and they give you upgrades or abilities. Build another road and do all these kind of things. And you're basically just trying to empty those wagons, get more wagons, empty them. You're just trying to move as many people out west as you can and have them establish cities across the country. And then at the end of the game, you kind of like take your segment of road, and every person along that gives you 2 points. So that's kind of the big end game scoring. So you can kind of go for that big end game score, or you can just try to score a lot throughout the game, dropping off, you know, people and not worrying about all that, and hope you kind of hold out on the high element there. Got a little more hectic when we play with three, and it's hard to get all your roads together, but that kind of made it more fun. Like, you really felt like the interaction was a little frustrating in a good way. Like, I'm able to frustrate people and they frustrate me. So I enjoyed that a lot. 15 is Dice Throne. I think I played this early in June. It feels like a while now. I know I've talked about Dice Throne a bunch, but it's just fun to just pull out two characters, set them up, start playing the cards, rolling the dice, and it's just got a good mix of, like, I can play these cards, I can roll these dice, I can mitigate these dice, and I'm just trying to take you out. The production is just so good on this game. I really enjoy that a lot. Dice Throne, that's from Roxley Games. 14 is Draftosaurus from Ankama. Love Draftosaurus, just a really simple drafting game where you're actually drafting dinosaur meeples and then cleverly placing them out, and then it's interesting. The kind of lead player each round rolls a die, and it restricts everybody else, but not them. But of course, then, you know, what goes around comes around, because then they've got turns where they're restricted. And that just keeps you from being able to do your plans perfectly. It's just a great little drafting game. Lots and lots of fun. Uh-oh, I'm trying to figure out if I messed up my numbering system here or went out of order. I see Draftosaurus at 14, and then I don't see a 13, so I may have messed up my numbers again, but here we go. Buddy Kingdom is number 12, so we dug this out. Kathy and Zephyr and I played. Boy, what a great game. I had played this years ago at a VonnerCon and really wanted to pick it up again, but just never kind of bit the bullet, and Brian let me borrow his copy, and it was just great. Like, you just draft and pass. What's so clever is you can draft two cards. So you're really trying to think about, what two cards do I want out of here? And then you can play those cards, and you're just claiming spaces on a grid, and you're trying to connect all the little spaces to make fiefs. And then there's just a ton of endgame scoring cards. I mean, the game couldn't be any simpler. It could be slightly simpler, I guess, if it didn't have a board, but it's very simple. And then there's just so much thought into, do I want this? And what's that person going to pass me? And will this card come back around? Which is super fun. Can I let it ride? And people won't do that. It's a great game, great production. Richard Garfield and Yellow Games. Highly recommend Bunny Kingdom. That was really, really good. Number 11 has just been really, really popular and played so much. So many of these, I'm saying this with Corona because we're playing, you know, just in the house so often. And it's Dutch Blitz, which is just like a speed game that's been around for a while. It's almost like a like Spit, that game, if you ever played that with a deck of cards, and you're just trying to run yourself out as fast as you can, the Dutch Blitz, and you win, and it's just really hectic. And Kathy and I tend to sit down and play some head-to-head matches of this. You know, it's no thought. It's all just speed. And she always just crushed me in Spit, but I've been better able to hold my own at Dutch Blitz, which makes it a little more fun to play. And Zephyr likes jumping in on this. We've had games where we played with 5 or 6 people. So if you see that one around, I suggest just picking it up. If you go to, like, Amish country, they'll sell this game because it kind of has that, like, Dutch Amish theme to it, I guess. so that's a fun one to pick up. So check that one out. Okay, number 10 is Xenon Profiteer. This is an old game from TC Petty and Eagle Griffin Games, And it is a deck deconstructor. And deconstructors are some of my favorite games, like Valley of the Kings and Heart of Crown, where you put your deck together and then take it apart. And this game, you frequently take apart in terms of all that. That's what you're doing. You're like collecting pockets of air. And so you're going to get nitrogen, oxygen, krypton, and xenon. Now, there's also argon in our air for all you science nerds out there or just people who want to know. But they explain in the book that eventually, I mean, argon is traces when they're trying to get the xenon. And they just couldn't fit it in the game mechanically. It was going to be too overwrought. They wanted to have four things. So you collect a packet, and you get money every time you do that. A packet, it's one of each card, and you add it to your deck. And at the start of every turn, you look at your hand that you've drawn, just like a deck builder, and you can get rid of kind of the highest on that chain. So if you have any nitrogen, you get rid of all of it in your hand. Then you get rid of all of your oxygen, then your krypton. Only one of those per turn, however. So obviously you're thinning your deck as you go through. And then once you have just xenon in your hand and no other gases, boom, you collect that xenon in a bottle. And that's how they actually distill xenon. They remove the gases one at a time. There's different ways to remove nitrogen and oxygen and krypton and argon based on their properties. And then you're just left with xenon, because extracting xenon itself is not easy to do. So that's what you're doing in the game. And there are also other cards that you could buy from like a center pool. The main ones being just point cards. Oh, if you have a certain number of xenon, you could trade it in for a contract and boom, you score points. Maybe you get money depending on how it is. And then the other cards are like your classic deck builder, like add this and you could upgrade and now you have some ongoing ability. Every time you get rid of oxygen, you get a buck. So now you're like, okay, let me get a lot of oxygen. Or there's cards in your hand that are just like, hey, you could do that distilling process twice every turn. So you're just better at it, or collect more, whatever it is. And there's just lots of different ways to go. It's like 30 minutes, maybe 40 minutes. And then you can bid for those things, so people have to give you money. And then it has like a little side expansion too, where you get like individual player powers and unique ways that you start the game. It's great. I love this game. I love deck deconstructors even more than deck builders, I think. Because you just really have to cleverly think about when is it time to take things, when is it time to remove things, and what's the order of that. It just adds other layers. Really, really good game. I know a couple times in the past couple years I've done like, hey, these are games you should probably like go back and play. And Xenon Profiteer to me is like a game to go back and play. Along with like a Catalyst and a Magna Storm and a Castell and a World's Fair. Those are all games on my list that I'm still like, hey, go back and play this. And these are the ones beyond like the hits. You know, I'm looking at Root right now and that's like, yeah, definitely try to play that unless you're really against dudes on a map or whatever. But that one is a lot of fun. Okay, next up, number 9 is Shadows of Killforth. We reviewed this on the last episode, and it was just not necessarily something that Kathy and I thought were in our wheelhouse, and we just kept playing through it, and by that like third play, we were like, wow, this is smooth, we know what we're doing, we understand the game, and it really just teaches you that sometimes it's just that barrier of rules that's so tricky. Had this recently playing Nemesis, and it just was an hour and a half of reading rules and then dying, and it was frustrating, but... You know, sometimes you just have to go back to a game to find it, and Shadows of Killforth to me is there. Really, really fun game. Really enjoyed that one from Tristan Hall and Hall or Nothing Games. So that was my number 9, played in June. Number 8 is Tang Garden. Again, did a review for this. And this one just, boom, it's there on the surface. You see the game, and then it's just kind of the layers. It's again, the aesthetic is great. What you're doing is great. It's got just a little more think than the game would present from the rules, kind of similar to Bunny Kingdom. And I like that a lot. 7 is Animal Kingdoms. This has just been a huge hit with the family. Some of these I've talked about a bunch, especially you get to this higher end, so I'm trying not to go too much over. But yeah, Animal Kingdoms, really good with family. And I don't see it on the shelf readily available, so I can't remember the publisher off the top of my head, and I apologize on that. But I'm not going to know all these, so that's how it goes. But Animal Kingdoms, kind of a newer game. Number 6 is Wingspan. I know Wingspan wins all these awards. I was excited at the Dice Tower Awards for definitely winning Game of the Year and all those kind of things, but it was neat to see like a spread of games winning. I was really proud of that, being on kind of Dice Tower committee or heading that up, whatever. However it is that I'm in this capacity, I didn't have a lot this year with everything being distanced. But why Wingspan was so high up for me here was we played this game, Kathy, Zephyr, and I, and the scores were so close, and it was great because I really don't think of Wingspan as a family game. I feel like it's more strategic than that. I think I was wrong. Zephyr was dead on with this game. She knew what to do. She remembered her powers. She kept moving through the game. It moved pretty quick. Really, honestly, this game at 2 and 3 players is so fun. Teaching 5 new people is rough for this game, and that's where I think I kind of fell off. But playing this game with 2 and 3, yeah, it's good. It's a solid game. So I enjoyed that a lot. Number 5 is High Rise. Again, a lot of these, like I said, I've talked about a whole bunch, but this is just a great game from Gilhova. Got a chance to play in the month of June with Brian. A 2-player game again, and it was solid. Really good. He beat me pretty well, but definitely there's just so many avenues that go around like a time track or whatever, a city track, and whoever's behind gets to go next. It's just so clever. And then Gil added another layer with like, yeah, you can, but you can't hit every space. You kind of move through these pockets of spaces. And that was just, that's something I've never seen. That was great on the innovation of that whole idea. So I thought that was really well done. Number 4 is Thunderstone Quest. So this is one I pulled out. I can't remember if I talked about this in May. I don't think I did. Maybe I did. But I'm going to tell this story anyway. So I pulled this out, giant box. Half the cards were sleeved in the like Fantasy Flight sleeves that are now out of print. Because they've got like a different brand that they're in on. And I was like, okay, am I going to like go buy the remaining Fantasy Flight sleeves and sleeve this game up? Do I like this game that much? Is it time to just let it go? And it's just too much to break out. And boy, I broke this out and played by myself, and it was awesome. And I played a 2-player co-op game with Kathy, and it melted our brains. It was so good. And then I played the competitive mode with 3 players, and it was great as well. And this game is just so good. The variety in the box is essential. The barricades mode solo co-op is awesome. And I just really, really like this game. This would appear in my top 50, 100 games of all time. This is a great game. And that is from AEG. Next up is Unfair. Unfair is from Good Games, Good Guild. And this is just one that popped up, and it's just been such a surprise. Just a great engine builder. A lot of Take That, but there's literally cards that say, like, you can play without Take That. You have to be friendly to each other. So we've used that, and there's just a great engine build. This is like a big engine building game, right? Think Terraforming Mars. It's not quite that long. And you're building a theme park, which I feel like is something that games have just wanted to do, and they haven't succeeded as much, and this one does it. It's really fun. It's a card game. Great engine build. Unfair is awesome. Number 2 was a big review from last episode, and that's Skytear from PvP Geeks. This has been my surprise hit of the year. It's just a great game, great plays in June. Just learning all the different elements, and I'm excited because they're coming out with a single lane map with 2 domes. And I think that's really going to kind of change up how you think and your deck build. Again, the issue with this game, you kind of got that 2-player. It plays with other player counts, but 2-player's kind of where it's at. I don't think teams with 4 would be too bad. And then you layer in that deck building. So it's definitely going to be a game you need to like commit to play several times. And I thought I was just going to melt my brain after the first play or two, because it was just so different from games like that I've played. It wasn't straightforward. And once I got through that, boy, it was just great. Just a great game. So I really liked that a lot. And then the number 1 game played in June 2020, Gloomhaven, Jaws of the Lion. I think I rated it a 10.5 out of 10. I mean, it's better than Gloomhaven because it teaches you how to play and keeps that difficulty there. Been playing this a bit with a group and gotten pretty far. And, it's a small group, not like a group, make it sound big. And the one could play has been, it seems too easy, but like we're playing on level 1 and you could just turn it up to 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So we can make it as hard as we want. If it's there, the story feels more cohesive to me. I know what's going on. I'm playing a little more consistent. I did also go back in July and play Gloomhaven with Kathy several times. And I mean, it's still just amazing in where we are and the characters we have. I feel like where Jaws of the Lion is going to lose out is in not getting new characters. So I would feel like if people play through Jaws of the Lion, they haven't played Gloomhaven, that's just going to point them right to Gloomhaven, which is, I'm sure, what Cephalofair and Isaac would love to have happen. Me too. I'd love to have people pick up Gloomhaven. There's a lot more in the Gloomhaven box, and this one just simplifies it down. But boy, there's a lot there. Like, it's a big old game in a box, even at $50. But yeah, this is where it's at, and people just need to pick this up. And once they play this, I mean, yeah, it's just, it's crazy. I looked, and it was ranked pretty high. Like, it was in the top 1,000 games already. So this game's just going to crawl up there. I don't know. Could Jaws of the Lion pass Gloomhaven? Would that be crazy? I can't imagine the outcry if it's Jaws of the Lion number one and Gloomhaven number two on BGG. But it'll be interesting for sure to see. But great game, great implementation. If Gloomhaven just sounds like the opposite of your thing, there's no way this is going to convince you. But if it's always been like, I feel like I would like Gloomhaven, but I can't drag out the tiles and I can't get that box, and I don't know if I can get people to commit to play with me, and I'm worried about that, and I don't want to learn all those rules. I mean, my goodness, this is a textbook in how to teach people to play a game through just reading and walking through everything. It's just so well done and just such a great game. So get out there and play that. There you go. There's the games of June 2020. I hope everybody's having a good summer. I'm looking around me at stuff I'm hoping to get played. I'm really hoping to get played Lord of the Rings Journeys in Middle-earth, because that kind of came out last year. It just won the Dice Tower Solo Game Award. Obviously, I always have Marvel Champions on the brain. The announcement of Kang yesterday was really cool. And then I'm looking at Sid Meier's Civilization: A New Dawn. They just announced an expansion for that, so I really want to play that again. As well as Empires of the North was just such a great game that I'm excited to dive into as well. So lots of good games coming out to be played. I don't know what's coming out this year. I've kind of looked at the list on BGG, and it's just hard to know. It's more exciting when you do a Gen Con or you see a Gen Con preview. You want to be careful if you do, you know, just can't go or aren't able to go or whatever. And, you know, it's fine. But looking at previews and things, we just don't have as much of that. So it'll be interesting to see what we really get from some of these conventions and what we can get our eyes on. You know what? Now I'm looking ahead at Underwater Cities, and I've got the expansion. That was my favorite game. Really that. We shall see. But with that, that'll do it for this episode 154. I'm your host, The Brent. And until next time, I hope you step